of the sale, day two of our recapping of the weekend. And if you were still tied on from the replay from yesterday, and if you missed any of it, there was a lot. There was a lot to absorb, including a lot of business conversation, and I think a lot of people benefited from Sid's explanation of what was transpiring after we got off the air. And what transpired was over and above expectation, to say the least. We'll get to that undoubtedly, and not even sure yet which of the various bloodstock correspondents are going to check in, but we will certainly provide you an overview with what went on Sunday afternoon and evening at Phasig. Of course, we touched on that a little yesterday. And then yesterday, in addition to the flight line share that Sid explained, one of the 40 that ended up selling for $4.6 million, essentially more than, seemingly more than twice the practical, let's call it that, practical valuation. And I actually heard from some very experienced bloodstock people and industry veterans that said that the $4.6 million was insane. was just crazy. And essentially, based on what you heard from Sid and the conventional valuations of a stallion, this was obviously a special premium and a unique situation. But certainly for the partner that wanted to cash out, take money off the table, and you can't blame anybody for for taking that approach. You certainly understand. It may not make sense financially the way Sid laid it out, but certainly a portion of this investment will be defrayed, and the specific buyer, wishing to remain semi-anonymous, people that are intimately familiar with Brookdale, and of course Fred Seitz Jr., bidding on behalf of one of Brookdale's clients that has got mares. Freddie suggesting one of their clients that has 6, 7, 8 mares and has had success and has been associated with some nice horses, but wanting to step things up. And so even though from a practical standpoint, when the dollars and cents are added up, that Flightline should be, that this share essentially should have paid, should have been purchased for, in the two to two and a half million range. This is a situation for an extra reach into the pocket for an extra $2 million to be, that much closer and to essentially forward the plans that this client seems to have and the aspirations that they seem to have. So will certain things have to, break right from a practical standpoint in terms of, using the two covers that they'll get for their mares? Well, yeah, things have to, go perfectly to pay this back, but that's what paying a premium essentially, doesn't worry about. when you're doing this, you're it's not even caution to the wind. It's I'm going to pay extra and above the logical sum to be involved. And this Brookdale client outlasted Coolmore. This was quite something. Let's just put it that way. And of course, if you haven't seen the metaverse, the virtual flight line in the ring, because the actual flight line was out at Lane's End already, trying to let the air out of his balloon. Although, if you listen to John Sadler with us yesterday, you have to really appreciate the way John framed flight line as a as a horse to work with, and it doesn't seem we were out at Lane's End yesterday and did hear some of the specifics of what they're doing. They're going to take their time and the special attention to a horse that's been on the racetrack. Any horse, doesn't have to be a stallion prospect, but any horse, they're creatures of habit and routine. So when you cross things up, and he's at peak fitness, obviously. So everything so far that he's indicated is that he understands where he is. He's somewhere other than the racetrack, and with each passing morning, when he doesn't have to go out and work, he'll begin to understand and relax. And then there's a whole other process that they'll go through by February 15th to get him ready to cover mares. I mean, it's a fascinating scenario. Meanwhile, everybody associated with the horse continues to kind of just, I think, bask in a unique scenario. I don't want to call it a furor, because it's really not a furor. It's a high energy kind of an aftermath. And the discussion, I'll say this, as we mentioned yesterday, and we're going to discuss today, Nick Luck is going to be here in hour two. We'll get Nick's recap of the weekend. Nick has got to feel like a complete, I mean, he's got to be just wrung out from the Australian Odyssey and then the assignment here Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then, getting home. But Nick, generous enough, he certainly was generous with us Friday on a broadcast day to, come spend that half hour. But we'll let Nick, I want Nick to specifically address the, the Charlie Appleby, Aidan O'Brien domination on the grass front. So, and I also will let him opine on what he makes of flight line's place in history. Andy Serling, of course, at hour three, and Andy and I have talked two or three times since Saturday, obviously off air, and Andy, has got as good a historic perspective as anybody, and anxious to hear his thoughts. He was on hand, and of course, you watched Andy during the players' telecast. We'll get to Popo later. I think we're going to get Christy DeBernardis in this hour before the session starts. So looking forward to that. Jeff Bloom, and let me partially shift gears as I lay out the lineup today. John Green is going to join us. We couldn't get to John yesterday. We'll talk to John. I think Todd Pletcher as well. Todd is at Churchill this morning, and I saw Todd as we were both leaving the sales grounds yesterday afternoon, and I asked him, "Do you want to come? Do you got time for something?" And he said, "Well, I'm going to be at Churchill," and then he's flying back to New York later this morning or early afternoon. So I'm hoping that Todd can join us to talk about his absolutely terrific. He was so funny. I said, "Can I get you tomorrow?" He said, "For what?" I said, "For what?" I said, "You had a pretty, you had a pretty decent weekend," I thought. He's so funny. Looking for Todd, and we will in about 5 minutes be joined by Costa Hironas, and we'll let Costa tell you how he and Stephanie and their family, what this all meant to them and means to them. You heard from, if you're listening, obviously, you heard David and Gordo these last, 40 minutes, 45 minutes, really kind of telling. When I put up the podcast listing when Casey was loading the pod later after the show. Like, I called it the flight line story because essentially David, you know, brought it full circle, you know, right from spotting him that day at Summerwind Farm and then tracking him. And that portion of the story about running into him on the Tex Sutton flight, I mean, that's one of those flourishes. Like, if this was a script for a Hollywood production, if this was, you know, if this was the flight line, the movie, I think there was a, wasn't there a movie flight line, that idiotic thing where Liam Neeson is figuring out a hijacking or whatever. Was that called flight line, or there was a movie? I think there was, actually, right? But if they're going to do an equine version of flight line, that's one of those portions that, you know, feels made up, like they sent the script to a script doctor. And they wrote that portion in. David flying east, you know, or whatever, runs into the young flight line that he hadn't seen since the farm. It's you know, it's just ridiculous. It's like a meet cute, right? That's what it's called. Where are my script people? Jay Hovde, right? It's a meet cute. Well, Costa, and I hope Jane Lyon as well will put the, you know, put the wrapping paper, as it were, on this entire package. I wanted to really get you every part of Flightline's success, and I suppose Flavian Pratt should be folded in as well. So, but I started to lean toward Jeff Bloom, because Midnight Bisou, through the ring, in full to tap it, and $5.5 million to Mr. Yoshida. The Japanese interests continued their buying spree. Dreamloper, the five-year-old coming out of the weekend, to Mr. Yoshida as well for $2.7 million. Shamrock Rose, who's in full to Curlin, who was absolutely the star of the weekend from the Stallion side, and Shamrock Rose, $3 million to Japan. You also had Marion Ravenwood, we should bring up, of course, for fans of Indiana Jones. Coolmore buys at the age of 14 and in full to Curlin, buys Marion Ravenwood from the Listers, and of course the Dam of Nest. So maximizing her value at this stage, and you know, she's also got the baby as well, that the 2-year-old. A couple of other names, Edgeway, since we're hoping to talk to Jane Lyon. Jane stepped in and bought the 5-year-old competitive edge mare to add to her broodmare band, $1.7 million. I mean, there was just, this was a very robust day of trade, as expected. 2.3 for Four Graces. And not sure yet if the 5-year-old Majestic Perfection mare will race. I didn't see a note. Maybe Christy DeBernardis will know. $2.3 million to Mandy Pope, and so on and so forth. Bobby Flay bought one for $750, a Ghost Zapper, Potion, who's in full to Essential Quality. Windstar, Donatella for $900,000. Bees and Honey to Larry Best for $925,000. A Jouster. Jouster, the Noble Mission, 4-year-old, to Mr. Yoshida, $1.5 million. And Salty as Can Be, Determined Stud, and Gage Hill bought Salty as Can Be, the 4-year-old, for $2 million. She's in full to Quality Road. And let's see, the top weanling. How about the Medallia Doro filly for $1.5 million weanling? that Delridge and Hillendale bred together, and I spent about a good 40 seconds with John Sakura, who was, I mean, just up and down the hill and all over the place yesterday. A huge day for Hillendale from the consignment side. And Coomore bought this one. This is the one out of Serena's Cat. Donatella's Quality Road Colt. And, of course, she's carrying a full sibling, $700,000 as well. This one to Larry Best. So there was a lot went on, and day two and three, today and tomorrow, book two. So we will get some more details in just a little bit from Christy DeBernardis. And we will actually, we're going to get Costa in a couple of minutes. Let me first get Jeff Bloom to join us, and we will get we'll get the Midnight Bisou story directly from Jeff. And it's really been a fabulous odyssey, of course, from a racing career. And one chapter kind of ends here. Jeff, congratulations.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.
You know, talk about this. I saw you the other night and had you know, kind of forgotten. You know, you get caught up in the Breeders' Cup weekend action, and then I sort of, it popped in my head. I said, "Oh my gosh, you're selling Bisou."
Yeah, and that was essentially our Breeders' Cup, I guess. You know, but what a, you know, what a spectacular Breeders' Cup event we had, though, right? I mean, I'm sure you've already talked through it quite a bit, but what a couple of days of racing.
Well, and what's amazing is that, you know, and this is the first time I've done this, you know, even though there's been plenty of Breeders' Cups in Kentucky that I you know, very easily could have stayed, and I guess it was the September sale that sort of opened the door, and Tony Lacey said, "Why don't you stay after Breeders' Cup?" I said, "Okay, I guess I could do that," and I'm delighted, of course, that I did, just because from afar you see the, you know, the Night of the Stars action on Sunday immediately after Breeders' Cup, and now there's this long haul, you know, 12-day sale, you know, the biggest bloodstock distributions in the world, and it's a whole different coda to what went on the weekend, and you know, there's so many horses that participated. There's so many updates that came out of the Breeders' Cup into the, you know, the stock, whether it's weanlings that got updates or broodmares, and so it's a unique experience, and another, you know, just another thing to, you know, add to you know, the things that are fascinating about the game. I mean, talk about, you and I have talked about Midnight so many times, really, over the last, what, 4 or 5 years. I mean, talk about this chapter, and of course the fact that you know, she's it's not like she's going to be someplace where you can readily visit.
Well, I've already started looking into what are the quickest, easiest routes to get to Japan, but you know, it's the next chapter in the process of this cycle of you know, trying to identify, develop, and produce racehorses, you know, and so, I've said it so many times, Steve, the journey that this beautiful horse took us on, she touched so many different lives in so many different personal ways, and in my opinion, arguably one of the most incredibly graceful, beautiful, classy, elegant animals I've ever seen, you know, and just to know that she's going to an incredible facility where she will be looked after and cared for in the ways that you would expect, you know, to happen. And so, you know, I'm thrilled for the folks that got her and you know, and for my partners, the Allens, who, of course, when she went through the ring the first time, decided that they wanted to keep her and bought her back, you know. And so the fact that I was fortunate enough, being the one that manages their portfolio, got to stay directly involved with the entire process in that next stage of Midnight's career. It's just been a storybook situation from start to finish at this point.
With these decisions, and it's interesting because it came up with Bell's The One, for instance. Bob Lothenback on Sunday night ended up taking back Bell after she didn't meet reserve. There's various ways in which the owners determine there's sellers. We all know about buyer's remorse. There's seller's remorse where you're watching this process and you're thinking, I don't want her to go. Right?
So here's what happened. When Midnight Bizu was retired from racing and she went through the ring, she blew through her reserve. So, partner Chuck Allen, we were sitting right next to each other, if you recall, in the ring, and he decided that, I think all along, when you have partners, not everybody's always exactly on the same page, but you discuss, a game plan and your strategy and you go with it. And Chuck Allen decided that, she was worth a certain amount, and also more important than that, I think, decided that, regardless of the economics of it, he was more in tune with keeping her if, unless she reached a certain price. And again, as I point out, she blew through her reserve in that sale. So when he bought her back, it was, live bidding against actual folks who also wanted her. So the good news in this equation is by virtue of keeping her, we put together a game plan that got us a Curlin colt, a phenomenal looking Curlin baby, and we put her in foal to tap it. And so the folks that stepped up and acquired Midnight Bizu now have the legacy of Flight Lines sort of waiting to be born. A Tappet filly, obviously you wish them nothing but success. It's an incredible family. And, Midnight with the One baby on the ground, it's really interesting because many of the attributes of that baby are very similar to Midnight Bizu. Of course, there's certain characteristics you see from the Curlin side of it, but there's a very strong Midnight Bizu presence in that colt. So that's it's very exciting.
Who's in on the baby?
So that's the Allens, and then another partner who's done stuff with us throughout the years by the name of Andrew Yaffe.
Very nice. Well, there is a piece of Bizu that stays in North America, and we'll track that one. And when we recount the whole odyssey of this Midnight Loot filly, it is pretty funny because going all the way back to her yearling trip here at Keeneland, where she R&A'd for $19,000.
How about that, Steve? I mean, that's the wackiness and beauty of this great game of horse racing that we're playing in. It's you just never know.
You then picked her off though for $80,000 as an OBS April 2-year-old. Woodford had taken her home and shrugged their shoulders and let her grow up.
Clearly, I overpaid considering the R&A price as a yearling.
It's unbelievable. And it's been a while. Who started her? Who got her going as a 2-year-old on the training front?
She went out to, she was, of course, since we bought her out of a 2-year-old sale, she had already been broken.
Right.
And so we sent her directly to California. And Bill Spar, we had had some horses with Bill out there, and I sent Midnight to Bill, and he got her started. We didn't,
I remember
we
that.
Didn't rush things. So her early part of her career was out in California.
No, but Woodford with Woodford with their people, when she went through as a 2-year-old in training in April.
Yeah, well, so Oh my gosh, I just blanked out on John's last name. But you know, Woodford, of course, are the ones who broker and got her prepared, as you know, they had her since day one. And they, of course, obviously did a wonderful job, prepping her and getting her ready. Yeah, it's just, like I said, it's just been a storybook tale from start to finish, really.
Out of curiosity, how did she breeze? How fast did she go at OBS?
You know, I am so cloudy headed right now. I want to, if I recall, I want to say it was a 10.1 for an eighth of a mile. It wasn't a sizzling sort of eye popping kind of type of breeze. But you know, I've talked about it so many times before. It's not so much about the time, but it's how they do it, right?
Exactly.
But if I recall, I'm pretty sure it was a 10.1.
No, just curious, because that's also, you know, that's also part of this equation. Well, it's a great story, Jeff, and given your background and the way in which things have just, you know, come together for you and the way in which you've managed your interests. We haven't even talked about. I could certainly bring in other elements of bloodstock. You just have demonstrated, such a quality approach to the business. Snapper Sinclair, there's another success story that follows suit with Bizu.
Yeah, no, thank you, Steve. I appreciate that. We're very fortunate. We've had really wonderful successes with our acquisitions and our program. And so you try to continue to work hard and continue to learn and then hope that you continue to get lucky here and there. But we've been very fortunate and we've got a really solid roster of stakes winners in our portfolio that we're really proud of. And look, at the end of the day, it's all about the Majestic Thoroughbred. It's all about the horse and the welfare of the horse and the joy and the experiences that they provide to us. I mean, if you think about the opportunities that are afforded to all of us in the industry, whatever your position as a stakeholder is, at the end of the day, it's all about the horse, there's nothing like this great game of horse racing.
Jeff Bloom with us. And before I let you go, a quick assessment of what we've seen here, the first two sessions, phasing on Sunday and here yesterday. Some thoughts about the marketplace?
Well, as you're well aware, it's been sort of a meteoric kind of environment at the sales, right? For yearlings and two-year-olds, it's just continued to defy logic relative to, other things going on in this world. But, we've been somewhat insulated in the markets. The last couple of days have been incredibly strong. Granted, we're talking about, a couple of days worth of very high profile and obvious select type individuals that are going through the auction ring. It'll be interesting to see how it continues to play out, for the remainder of what's left of the sale. But I know this, there's a lot of motivated buyers out there. And, it's a supply and demand kind of thing. People want racehorses. And when you have a lot of people wanting to buy those racehorses, usually the prices go up. So we'll see if it continues to play out that way.
What do you do with this sale now? Do you watch? Are you interested in weanlings? Do you, from a bloodstock side, is there anything else to be accomplished here over the next 10 days, week?
For us, we're kind of assessing the broodmare side of our portfolio. We've got a pretty substantial roster of broodmares. I don't know that we're necessarily looking to ramp up in any way that sort of position for us, but I'm always sort of intrigued by what's out there. I do very much like to evaluate some of the incoming stallion offspring, just to get a gauge on things. I may or may not dabble in acquiring some weanlings, both from a pinhook and racing standpoint. I'm just going to sort of sit back and kind of watch and see how it plays out and whether or not we pick up some weanlings or not still remains to be seen. But I do like to, I love this sale. It's one of my favorite sales in terms of, picking out a few weanlings here and there. We've been very fortunate in the past doing that. Each subsequent sale, as you know, you're taking on more risk when they're younger, but typically you're getting more value, right? So it's all relative, but we've been pretty lucky doing that, and so I guess that's my long answer to maybe we'll do something, maybe we won't.
Jeff Blum, everybody, and Jeff, best of luck. Congratulations to you and the Allens. And does the Curlin baby have a name, or is it just Curlin baby?
Right now, it's Baby Bizu.
Baby Bizu's cute.
It has not been officially named, and I think I'll get with Andrew and the Allens, and we'll sort of discuss. I think letting those guys let the dust settle a little bit now that Midnight Bizu's moving on might change what their focus or game plan is for the baby. Hard to say, but the good news is they've got an exceptional baby on their hands, and so it's going to be a fun ride for them moving forward for sure.
Well, and for those that keep track of these kinds of things, Diva Delight herself, very productive, and she had verifying in the Breeders' Cup this weekend, the Justify colt for Brad Cox, as it happens.
He looks like he's going to be a very nice colt too. I mean, of course, he was ultra impressive in his debut, and I don't think he had the best of trips in that race the other day. It's probably an understatement. And, they're young horses, but he looks like he's got a very bright future for him. So, I mean, what an exceptional mare she's been. One would expect and hope that that's what you see happening for the offspring of Midnight.
Well, she also had stage left, I remember, the congrats gelding. And there is a weanling by Uncle Mo, a colt that is poking around out there. She also had Wicked Bizu, the Wicked Strong, who's a four-year-old, and I'm not sure what's gone on with that filly, but Midnight Bizu, one of several high-profile Japanese interest purchases, and if you want to commiserate, Eddie Stanko is the guy to talk to. I think they set up a video monitor for Ed to watch for him to watch his mare that got sent off, and it's got to be a little hard, because when you have a horse like this that you could go visit at somebody's farm, when you come to Kentucky, but it's not as easy to hop on a flight and go to Japan.
Well, it gives you a good reason to have to visit a place that you might not normally have your target list. So, but yeah, it's all part of the deal. But like I said, at the end of the day, she is going to a fabulous home.
Oh, sure.
I mean, it's a spectacular facility. They're great people, and it's something that she deserves, and I'm glad it's finishing that way.
Jeff Blum, everybody, Blum Racing, and you can follow Blum Racing, and you're interested in the game. Jeff, somebody that will provide an entree for you, and is as generous with his time and his attention as anybody that you could get involved in the game with. So, Jeff, thanks so much for this. Congratulations again.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it. You have a great one.
Jeffrey Blum, everybody, and what a tremendous story, really. Midnight Bizu, the session and sale topper, which won't be, there's nothing that's going to fetch $5.5 million beyond that. So congratulations to them. And congratulations to one of our favorite people in the game. Costa Aronis joins us. Costa, unbelievable. Congratulations.
Always fun to be on the Steve Big Show after a big weekend of stake races. You know you did something good.
Something good. You've rearranged the historic landscape, Costa.
Very blessed. I mean, the Horonis family, very blessed to have a... We've had some great horses, Steve. We've been sold... I mean, it all started with Lady Shamrock. I remember people telling us back then, man, you need to treasure this moment because there's not going to be another one like this. You need to enjoy this ride. You're new to the business. These don't happen. You know, and then we had Iowa Tapa, and then we had Stellar Wind, then we had Hard Aces, then we had Accelerate. It's just, wow, we've been really, really blessed. So we have to thank the team that's John Sadler has put together for us and led Horonis Racing to where we are today.
Go on with that. We'll talk about Flightline and everything that went into this in a minute. But I guarantee you there's people listening who have not had as much success or has had some success and want to get to the next level. If you could encapsulate it and flesh it out, what has been the key to not just isolated success, but now ongoing success?
You know, I guess it's a team effort. It all starts, I mean, it starts and ends with John Sadler. So John built the stable. John's been our trainer. John has trained the horses. He's also trained the Horonis family how to be good stewards of the sport and how to be good owners. I give John credit for having David and Gordo on the team, and I give credit to David to having Lane's End on the team. So it just keeps going. And John's, we make fun at the barn that John's best claim ever was Juan Leyva, because he has an assistant trainer and someone that gets on horses every day. He's just been such a huge asset to the barn. And Renee and Caesar, his foreman, and his all his grooms, he's got a great group of people. So and for Horonis Racing's part, I mean, we let John do his job, and we let David do his job, and Lane's End do their job, and we let the horse people be experts at doing horse things. We're farmers. We farm grapes. Me, Brother Peak, my son DT, my wife Stephanie, we're learning as we go along. We're patient. But I guess the biggest thing for us is, Steve, we've just been we let the horse people do their job, and we've been supportive in any way we can.
As this story developed, and I don't know if you had a chance to hear David yesterday, but he really did take everybody step by step through the process, and you know that included sort of a happenstance, meeting of the young Flightline, and then from there, I mean the things that John Sadler has talked about, and the delays and. The injury that leaves that that fairly prominent scar on the hind end to some degree I said to David yesterday, Costa, that there's no way of knowing if that ended up being a blessing and giving him another 100 days down in Florida before getting to the races, and everything is like a cascading effect. So you the way in which this career ends up unfolding, everything that seemed like an interruption or a delay ended up seemingly being a blessing.
Yeah, I'll go back to our very first horse ever when he claimed in February of 2010, and we claimed a horse, and she ran down the hill at Santa Anita. And then she was off for 11 months, and then she got claimed first back. So, yes, you do learn patience in this business right off the bat. And like David said yesterday, it was a really good, strong group that let John Sadler do his job. And there was never a hesitation or a question about, well, when? You let the horse leads
you know, the horse is going to be the leader in the group, and he's going to let you know when he's ready. And John listens to that. And we've always been that way. And it was such an honor and a privilege to be in this group that also had the same philosophy. So really, really thrilled that everybody was patient about this.
The way in which the partnership came together as well. I mean, talk about the, you know, the early, you know, the early blending of personalities, because I thought David, I thought David was really glowing in his appreciation of all the partners that really, you know, basically harmonized. You talk about how that happened and being at Saratoga, and I he sort of hinted at the, you know, the agglomeration having already been together in advance of the sale. But you know, at what point did you know that you guys were going to be involved and that, you know, you wanted to be the principal in Flight Line?
Well, okay, so I'm going to do this on national radio, so I'm going to get major credit at home for this. So 2 weeks before the sale, Stephanie, my wife Stephanie, has the, you know, the Fasting Tipton yearling book in the suite, and she's telling John and I, you know what, I have to go for a TOBA meeting. I'm going to go to Saratoga and go to a horse sale. Now, I've never been to a horse sale myself. I know that sounds shocking after 12 years. John Sadler doesn't invite me and doesn't want me to go to a horse. He wants me to grow grapes and help pay the bills. So I stay home, and I let him do his job. I let him and David do his job. So I've never gone to a horse sale in my life. But Stephanie's going through the book, looking at all the pages. She goes, you know what, I'm going to be at TOBA for a meeting. I'm going to the Saratoga sale. I'm going to be with David, and I'm going to buy you guys a horse. And we're like, yeah, we'll just let David handle that if that's okay, honey. But she's just like, she was on that track for about 2 weeks. So she did call that night, and she said, we're looking at a horse, but it was obviously too expensive for us to do. But anyway, then I said, you guys need to call John. So then they called John, and John okayed everything as far as that was concerned, because I don't do anything without John. And yeah, and then the partnership, you know, evolved. And when I heard Jane Lyon from Summer Wind was going to stay in, that made me feel really good on that kind of a purchase, because that's for us, that's a big purchase. We've never done anything like that before. But you know, to hear that Jane was staying in, I have nothing but respect for her and her broodmare of that she has at her farm. And then Bill Farish is in, you know, he's Lane's in. We've got Accelerate, Catalina Cruiser, and Gift Box all there. So yeah, I have no problem with that. And Terry, we'd done a little bit with Terry in West Point. We'd had good experiences, so no problem there. And Sienna, again, another great person in this industry. So it all made sense. Once John stamped it as approved, we were all on board. And it's really been a great adventure. We're not partnership people. We're pretty much raced by ourselves. But it's been really fun to do this kind of thing. And we've really, again, we're really blessed. The Hieronymuses all feel very blessed.
And it does seem, I mean, based on what happened, and I want your reaction to yesterday's share sell, but it does feel like the variety of people that are involved in the base, you know, that'll have the 80 shares to, you know, to cover mares, then, you know, whatever Lane's End brings in on, you know, on the recruiting side and bringing mares to him, there feels like every likelihood of success, you know, assuming his get, you know, they throw the switch. In terms of, I don't want to jump too far ahead, because I do want your reaction to the starts as things were unfolding, and, you know, the growing awareness of just, you know, how high a level the horse was performing. But since we're talking about the group and things that transpired, what was your impression of going into this share sale yesterday, and then, you know, seeing it basically double what, you know, what the valuation says it should have been worth?
Yeah, I mean, they talked to me about the metaverse early, and I had no idea. I'd never heard of the metaverse. I'm 63 years old. I just didn't know anything about it. So I had one of the young guys in the office go to work on it and get me up to date on it. So it was that's quite interesting. I see people buying houses in the metaverse, and so I didn't really have an opinion on this because I just don't understand anything about it, and. So it was fun to watch. I watched it there at the house with Stephanie. I went home just to watch that on there. And we had those virtual. They had given us those. So that was quite an experience. But yeah, I understand. Stock is limited. As far as I know, there's no shares for sale. And there was one, so it went for a premium. And I think the price actually is. We'll see in the future. But I think maybe they ended up getting a deal. We'll see.
Well, the season that unfolded after winning the Malibu and you're somebody that is just as pleased winning a 50 claimer as you are grade ones, you and Pete. You talk about the career as it was unfolding and how the expectations kept getting elevated.
Yeah, and I guess that became so matter of fact because as we watched Flightline, over the weekend, on workouts and stuff, just really develop. And again, I know John's given Juan nothing but great credit for that. But I remember after the Pacific Classic, I was watching the replay, and before they started the Pacific Classic, Simon Bray on FanDuel had shown a video of Flightline like early in the year and doing like a 5 furlong workout, and it looked like I think they just Juan describes it as riding a hurricane, so both feet on the brakes and pulling and then they showed his workout right before the Pacific Classic, and they had turned him into such a professional, a relaxed horse that could just get up to a cruising speed and just put off 12 seconds. The funny thing about Flightline is, and I'd never heard John say this, but you think your watch is lying when you're looking at him work out because he looks like he's doing 24 and he's doing 22 just because he's doing it so easy and it's such a beautiful stride. But yeah, I met the whole family. My brother Pete, I got to give him a lot of thanks for supporting my very bad habit, but I don't golf, fish, or hunt. I've told you that. So this is what we started to do, and it looks like it's all worked out for us. So, and the whole family, all the kids have been really supportive, and DT here on the ranch to help when I'm gone. And but yeah, this ride, the Flightline, has been so exciting, and yeah, I'm really happy for horse racing too because I think we need a star. I wish it would have come earlier, but things happen, and again, patience is a virtue. And I think as I think we did best by him on this career move because he's 4 turning 5. If it was 3 turning 4, this wouldn't have been a question. But 4 turning 5 kind of changes things. But yeah, what a ride! What a great thrill! We couldn't be more happy and blessed.
We're talking to Costa Aronis and Aronis Racing, and he and Stephanie and the family and everybody that has been involved in racing the familiar green jacket that has now won 2 Breeders' Cup Classics. That in itself is with 2 different horses. That in itself a heady accomplishment. When it came, we tried to explain yesterday, Costa, about the insurance difficulties and having a horse whose level of success and performance basically makes him so valuable that you can't actually insure him for his his valuation. How much of that discussion was involved in making the decision? Because there was a point after the Pacific Classic where things like going to the Middle East were bandied about, and the race at Gulfstream, that there was a potential to stay around a little bit longer. I mean, explain your part in it, or maybe you put up your hands and said whatever the Farishes and the other business side of the partnership wants to do is you'll go along with. How did that decision all come around?
Yeah, well, I think your guest yesterday, Sid Fernando, was excellent, spot on. He described it to the letter. If anybody wants to listen to your replay, listen to Sid's portion, and he explains all that, I meant in detail, and he is spot on. He's exact. I meant you're not even 50% covered. The premium is outrageous. It's just one of those things. He just this is not a common thing in our business. As far as his next career and how we were looking at that, yes. You know the Heroes family, very respectful people, so we listen to our team and start with John and David. Bill Farish, he does this for a living. Jane Lyon at Summerwind, and Sienna also. These people are all in the breeding business. We're in the racing business. So when, at that point, we just had to be really good partners and good stewards of the sport. And our focus was, let's just do right by Flightline. So we did kind of lean on them heavily to help, lead us, not to help us make the decision, but they led us to the decision and what was best for Heronis Racing and Flightline moving forward into his next career.
Well, the next career will include, you know, some babies, and you guys, how many broodmares currently do you have?
We just have a few. We just have four or five. We've sold a few of them that were pregnant with, like Catalina Cruiser and Accelerate and Gift Box, and we've kind of cut that back a little bit. So we don't really have the fancy ones. You know, the Stellar Winds got sold and the Iotapas, and we didn't keep anybody like that because, again, we've been on the racing side. Okay, maybe now it's something we can start to consider. Because this might be a different part of the portfolio we need to start looking at. But we're gonna crawl into that slowly. We're not gonna jump.
Well, explain from that standpoint, Costa. Explain the decision to sell Edgeway.
Well, again, she's probably too fancy for us. And boy, are we happy where she ended up, because she's at Summerwind, and like that's kind of like we feel like. We're part of home for her. It just, we love that farm. We love Jane. We love their ranch manager. We love everything about it. Stephanie spent some time there. Actually, her and Jane have become very good personal friends, which is nice. So I'm hoping Jane has a cot there close by, because I think she's going to see a lot of Stephanie, because Stephanie loves the Edgeway.
Well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned Catalina, because I actually had kind of forgotten, and you bring up Gift Box and of course Accelerate. It's quite something, to be honest, Costa. It's pretty heady.
Yeah, it's been quite a ride. It really has. It's been Steve. We let this grow, and it goes all the way back to Lady of Shamrock. I think Lady of Shamrock, her ability to win stake races and we didn't spend a lot of money on her, but at that point it was kind of like we said, we could do this. This is okay. We don't have to have an oil well to accomplish this. And there's a lot of, you go to the sales and you see the millions and millions of dollars going, and you're like, I don't know if we can do this. We can't compete with these guys. We got to stay on a low level. So it's been, I think Lady Shamrock, I give her a lot of credit, because she started this all and gave us the confidence to continue to reinvest and let it grow to now. It's another arm of our Heronis Incorporated, you know, besides the farming industry. So we owe a lot to Lady Shamrock.
Higher Power, who's at Darby Dan, on and on. I mean, it's an amazing, it's amazing that there's these horses that that I wouldn't immediately think of at this level. And how many, you know, how many there's been, even Combatant, right?
Yes, exactly. We lost him over, they had him do a dual breeding from New York. I think they sent him to Brazil and he passed. So, of colic. So that hurt a little bit. He was a cool, cool dude.
We're in full to Combatant at Rock Ridge.
Yeah,
we've got Carlisle Bell carrying a Combatant.
Yeah, he was like I said, he was a cool dude. He was ready to go all the time. He was one of those very professional acting stallions. So yeah, hopefully he has some really good ones that'll carry on for him.
Yeah, he over the summer in Chile.
Chile. That's yeah. Right. Okay.
Costa, watching the race, give us the lead up, and everyone was talking that if there was a way to beat him, it was going to be that he was going to be forced into out of his comfort zone potentially, and have to utilize energy early and throughout the race, and then potentially be vulnerable to late runners. Now, of course, that's not how it turned out, but that was the storyline going in. He gave no indication leading up that he was vulnerable, frankly. I mean, what we saw from him in the workouts after Del Mar, and then even in the gallops leading up to Saturday. But what was in your mind and in your heart as they were getting ready to go, and then as the race unfolded?
I mean, the day, it was probably the most relaxed I've been before a big day going, leading up. I was very excited for Edgeway's race because that race was loaded and I was worried about that. So that didn't go as planned. But then, the rest of the afternoon, we just kind of relaxed and enjoyed our day. I got anxious before the race started. I remember Stephanie leaned over to me right before the race and asked him, what do you think? I said, well, we're going to win, honey. Don't worry. And then Brother Pete coming to calm me down saying, we're good. We're good. So, but yeah, it went exactly according to plan. I mean, we knew what the Life is Good's plan was, which we give him all the respect for being in the Classic and running against us. That just goes to show if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best. So kudos to that team for racing him with that in that race. But it went according to plan. We knew exactly what we're going to do. We're going to sit off his hip for the first mile, and we're going to race the last quarter. So it went exactly like we thought it would. We didn't think we'd finish, go by him like we did and finish like we did, but you know what? That's Flightline. It's that simple. He's in a league of his own. He's a special equine athlete. He's something we haven't seen since Secretariat or Ghost Zapper probably. And to be mentioned alongside those horses, for a guy that's in the horse racing business to hear those names along one of your guys, wow, that's it. You just, and be ranked number one in the world now. That's all a big wow moment for us for sure.
How do you top this, Costa? Is it possible?
Yeah, actually, I need snow this winter so I can have water for the farm. So that would really be a topper. Because trying to grow grapes with no water in California has been a real challenge. So, so big picture, I guess the topper would be a lot of snow in the Sierra Nevadas during the wintertime, and we'd have water for the farm.
that says something about you, that the practical needs and the day-to-day business. And it's funny because whenever there's a big race and you come, you take in the race, and then you're right back to the farm. Whenever I've reached out to you, are you still here? Nope, I'm back. I'm on the tractor.
Yeah, Brother Pete's tough on me. I can go, but I gotta get right back. He doesn't mess around about that. We gotta get back to work. So like he says, the Monday morning we'll be back. We'll have our boots on picking grapes again. So nobody out here even knows about Flightline.
Costa Aronis and the Aronis family. You can follow Costa and congratulate him on Twitter. KOSTAHRONIS. Stephanie, who is contributing to the industry on boards, Steph Rosa 3, you can get involved with your mares, with any number now of Aronis family stallions that are at Lane's End and Darby Dan and elsewhere. Costa, how delighted I am for you guys' success, and you're one of the families and stakeholders in the sport that puts so much in, and so to be rewarded like this, so deserving. Congratulations, continued success.
Yeah, as you know, I was a fan of your show 20 years before I bought a horse, so to be on the Steve Bick Show, it's real high honor because everybody that listens to it's in the horse business, and we highly respect everyone in it. So thank you. Thank you very much.
It's very kind. Costa Aronis, everybody. And, you know, for the longest time, you know, Costa's not kidding, because as long as John Sadler's been coming on the show, he would come on after a Aronis horse stake win, and the first thing he would say is, "Hello, Costa," because he knew that you were listening. And that always made me smile. So just so delighted. This is really, it's been a tremendous story, and plenty of chapters yet to write. Costa, thank you. Costa Aronis, folks, and they're just the nicest people, and you can just tell. I mean, humble, and the way in which they're dedicated to the game, and, you know, at the same time, taking care of you know, their business first and foremost. Top of the hour is upon us. It flew by. That doesn't come as a surprise. Going to reach out now and let's take a break, Casey, actually. Let's get the break in, and we'll come back with a visit from Nick Luck. Nick will give us our first in-depth look, particularly at the turf races. We haven't had a chance to do that yet. We pretty much, you know, focused on the classic and the flight line story, and we're, I guess we still have, we have to get to Jane. We got to get Jane Lyon, but you're getting everything you would want to know about flight line. Let's step away. Back after this, hour two, Nick Luck is joining us, John Green, later Andy Serling, and don't know now, with the sale starting at 10 today, they may it may be tough to get Christy or Jess once the gavel starts knocking, the correspondents start rocking. So I don't know. Let me see, since the music started, let's see what else I can slip in here. We do have to talk about how the penny breakage. I don't know if you saw the recap. Pat Cummings and deservedly taking a bow and acknowledging how much extra money went into the pockets of players. We got to discuss that. There was a neat story in TDN, if you saw that T.D. Thornton, he's not named after Thoroughbred Daily News. He was T.D. Thornton before the Thoroughbred Daily News. T.D. wrote about the project at Belmont and how, you know, it's moving along. In fact, I can't wait to get a chance to visit and see things, you know, see how the tunnel and, you know, all that is coming along. But TD and the Breeders' Cup and Naira, you know, all kind of, you know, hinting and basically letting it be known that, yes, there will be a Breeders' Cup returning to Belmont soon enough. So everybody's got to be patient. I ran into David Fisk, to DJ Fisk yesterday, at the sale as well. He showed me the radiographs of Epicenter. That's a bad congealer. That was serious. If you haven't, I don't know if it's online, but that really fractured. And apparently it went right back together beautifully, but when they put the screws in. So he'll be fine. But for the stallion career, but this is one of those where they said to them, this is a horse that hasn't missed a day of training and hasn't, you know, just hit the wrong way. That's it. That happens. Sometimes you just, you know, you see just a little fissure. This was serious. And I have not heard an update this morning, actually. I'll try to get you an update on domestic. I haven't. Chad yesterday circulated that to everybody. So we'll see if Chad's got another update on domestic. That one, that's going to be a long haul. By the way, Dave Hill, who we'll talk to Thursday, big week for David. He 10-2-1. On the gridiron. Great job. Yeah, he killed it. Oh, and I also want to go over the results. The DRF team, some terrific work from them. All right, let's take the quick break. We'll come right back. We're at Keeneland, day two, recapping Breeders' Cup, and Nick Luck will join us when we return. Sirius XM at the races.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn.